Here we are, another episode of Behind the Human. This one's going to start and be a little bit different. Normally, we start off with a big who am I or who are you question with one guest. And today's a bit different. We have three, including myself. We'll see if these two let me do any speaking, but I'd like to participate in this one as well. We have Aaron and Valentin and myself, and we are going to jam on all things consciousness and how do we tap into other levels of consciousness. Like, why should we actually even care? What's possible? What are topics people aren't speaking about and that we would love to bring a little bit more airtime to and kind of everything in between. And I'll provide a little bit of backstory in a minute around how this all came to be. There's some interesting details to share on that side. But just first, you know, Aaron, Val, whoever wants to jump in first, like, why should people take a pause, grab a good cup of coffee or tea, and like really tune in and tap into like what's the why behind listening to this?
Aaron, do you want to do the honors?
Sure, I'll go. Well, I guess the best perspective to have is my own and why I would want to listen to this. And to quote the Black Eyed Peas, I guess, is that all there is, right?
Ooh, so I'd like it.
That's what got me started on this. And I think at some point in our lives, we start to ask this question, especially when we're pushing so hard to control our environment. And I think a lot of us have kind of come up on, it's just not working anymore. And so we're stepping into, okay, is that all there is? Well, no, there has to be something more. And however you want to, you know, qualify it or quantify it in your own life, I think we can all agree that tapping into something that is not ourselves is possible, and we've experienced it in some capacity or another. And so that's why this is an interesting conversation, is everybody knows what's going on around them to some extent, but we just said before, no one's talking about it. So I want to start to talk about it. And I think that this is a conversation for anyone who's been thinking along those lines and wants to know, where can I find similar people?
Love that. Yeah. And tonight's going to be a good night, as the other quote from the Black Eyed Peas that just came to mind. I feel, and you know, it kind of sent me on a tangent here because for me, there's something about this conversation and this topic that's around validating what, like this optimism that sometimes is understood as naiveness or naivete around, you know, the future of the world, the future of us, like what we're here to do. And there's a lot of doom and gloom news happening, of course, these days especially. And I sometimes find myself in this spot of like, am I just, you know, am I a fool here? I'm thinking about all those things. And as we talked with similar-minded people, as I'm starting to uncover some of the science behind the things we're going to be talking about today, I'm like, No. The optimists, the people who are, you know, feeling like they need to follow their hearts, that there's something more, that there's like intuition, there's this belief that's pretty deep. And, you know, we're not really sure where it's coming from. We are right. Like there is so much more. And so it feels like an alignment, you know, and again, like tonight's going to be a good night. Like there is something good coming. And it's feeling really exciting to start diving into it and talk to everyone about it. And I feel it in my body when I talk with others like you two on this topic. I just end the conversation feeling so full and so good and so, you know, myself and wholesome. So it's just a good sign that like that's the type of conversation I want to be having and listening to.
Well, I hate to disappoint everyone. I don't have a quote from Black Eyed Peas. I think these two collaborated on the side or something. But I do agree with it. What both of you are saying. And I think for me, like it kind of all started. And I think this, some of our earlier conversations, we've touched on this, but there's like something that you can't describe that seems to be happening right now. It almost feels like this collective shift in, I mean, we can call it consciousness or people tapping into levels of consciousness, but like something's changing and shifting for the better, at least is the way that I feel it. And that was the initial spark of curiosity, and then having more and more chats with the two of you about various projects that we're either directly involved with or been speaking about. There's just too many coincidences that continue to surface. And, you know, it just, to your point, I guess, Aaron, like, is this it? It can't be it, you know? And like, and I feel like I'm feeling that, but just can't put exact language to it yet, other than playing around with different practices and rituals and so forth, and like feeling the feels of different levels of possibility, but still like very curious and not really knowing kind of what I'm doing or what's going on.
No one does.
Exactly. No one does. Exactly. Val, why don't you share a little bit about your background as well, just because I think that helps set the tone as well, because you're working pretty directly in this space, which has been really helpful, I think, in a lot of the conversations we've been having.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so I'm working directly in the consciousness space right now because I'm the head of product at the Monroe Institute, which is one of the, if not the leading research center on consciousness and educational center on consciousness in the world. They've been around for 50 years and they organize retreats and events to help people understand that there is more to life than this, you know, what we can perceive in the material. And so I help on all of their digital offerings and help kind of guide the strategy of this company. And then I'm also working with Muse, the neurotech company. So helping them, similar role in a product sense, building new products and growing as a company. And this is really more on a, again, new set of things, which is quite interesting as well. You know, getting into really the science and what happens in the brain and kind of where does consciousness come from? And maybe that's something we can talk about at some point.
Do you have an answer for that question yet or what?
Well, the half answer I have is that, you know, the sort of the paradigm we operate in, most of the mainstream science operates from, is that consciousness is local to the brain. It's like somehow atoms in the brain, neurons, create consciousness. And it's actually called, it's a very known thing, even in a mainstream sense, it's called the hard problem of consciousness. Because when you zoom in more and more and more and more and more into the neurons and into, you know, the sub-levels of everything, at what point does consciousness arise? And when we say consciousness here, it's literally just the experience of something. It's like consciousness, in this case, is defined as like tasting coffee, as opposed to just the coffee itself. Where does that arise? We don't know that. And there's no good theory in the materialist's paradigm that explains how do we experience things. And so that's kind of one of the things that, you know, is being debunked these days. There's a lot of science that is starting to prove that consciousness is actually non-local. So it's not local to the brain. It's not being created inside this little mass of matter. And there's ways to prove this through some experiments. And we can dive into that at some point.
Love it. And Aaron, just explain a little bit about the work that you do. I know you're founder and operator and all things business and so forth, and kind of merging these worlds the best you can.
Yeah. So my day job has nothing to do with this. In fact, it's like quite the opposite, which is why I'm on this path now. And yeah. I worked in tech for the last probably about 11 years, also working in the product section of things, like helping design and envision and bring to life products for companies. And I guess just like anything else, COVID happens, you're building like crazy. I think all of us kind of went wild during that time. And then when AI came into to be, and that's what I was working with on a day-to-day in an AI-driven company, I started feeling those pings more and more, and I wasn't enjoying my work as much. And that kind of led me down a path of trying to explore it a little bit deeper. And what I started to do with experimenting this in the workplace was definitely visualizing my days and how they would be carried out for work so that I could find an enjoyment in my work again. And then the next step was actually talking to my colleagues about it to test the waters, because I didn't know how people would respond. And you know, you can't just throw something on the table. So, hey, like, do you believe in God over coffee, right? Like a kind of a big conversation. They don't mind talking about politics, but that's a tough one. So it was just testing the waters a little bit with people. And then I found a lot more people were thinking about it themselves, were going through a very similar thing to me. And then that became open conversation in the workplace. And we would go and meditate before a big meeting, or at least take like 5 minutes to center ourselves and ask for guidance or the right ideas to come in when we were like conversing with a customer, to make sure that we were operating on point and coming from another place rather than our analytical mind. And so that's how I kind of brought it into the workplace. I don't work in consciousness, but I use consciousness and the exploration of consciousness to format my days and to ensure I'm coming from that place before I build or bring anything to the public.
I love it. Well, and I also think, I mean, and I would classify myself kind of in a similar space to you and probably a lot of people listening right now on the show. And it's one of the big reasons I really wanted us to come together and have this conversation. I mean, we've had this conversation several times in other capacities, but I think, you know, just providing some context for the group. I mean, after doing a talk together at TechSkis, which for everyone listening, Aaron is one of the organizers of just a wicked tech conference here locally in Collingwood, Canada, and invited Val and I to speak about this topic, both of us not really knowing how we would approach it. And then the three of us, I think, really wondering, like, where are people at? Are we going to totally freak people out? Are they like, I'm not ready to have this conversation? I mean, even with the organizers as well as the participants of the conference. And we were just pleasantly surprised at the reaction. I mean, just really quickly at the very beginning, just to kind of show of hands of who's explored the topic, who's doing kind of guided breath work, who knew about, I think Val, you asked, who knew about Heart Math Institute and Joe Dispenza's work, and it was like 80% of the room lifted their hand up. And then also, as soon as we had, I don't know, 45, 50 minutes to speak about it, then we had a good hour afterwards of questions, which was wild and really...
You guys missed your lunch break, I think.
There was, right. For sure. It felt really nice to see the interest and have conversations with people that are clearly interested and want to know more and expanded, even, I think, what we were talking about in terms of where this could go. So that's like kind of like the very quick version for everyone listening of where all this has come from. But I think overall, I mean, there's so much discussion around, and Aaron, you mentioned working in AI. I mean, I think we're all working in AI in some capacity. There's a lot of talk about, like, you know, this is here kind of thing. Like, it's not a matter of, it's not coming, it's literally here. So it's how do you tap into that kind of technology and kind of get ahead of things and so forth. I think the same thing is happening, or will definitely happen, in this topic around leveraging consciousness, not just as a competitive advantage, but just in kind of how we just operate and think. And it's exciting.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of, I had this conversation. I was actually at the Monroe Institute a few weeks back, and with one of the participants there, we were on a meditation retreat. With one of them, we talked about sort of he mentioned like how there's kind of those masses of people, you know, and he talked about the airport specifically. It's like, you know, you see all the masses of people and like they're not thinking about this stuff. And I tend to disagree. And actually, it's funny because right when I flew back from that retreat, at the airport, there was a flight attendant who was on another flight but waiting, a Mexican woman who sat down next to me, and we just started chatting. And in like 5 seconds, we got to this topic. And she was all about meditation retreats, and she was going, you know, all those things. And it's happening over and over again, where like you see quote unquote random people being super educated, interested into those things, maybe not publicly out of the open, but I guess I'm lucky that I work in that stuff, so we get to talk about work very quickly, and so I explain what I do, and they're instantly
curious,
and they ask, and we start chatting. So I keep getting surprised at how, you know, even if we don't talk about it on a mainstream level, like there isn't this like cultural story that we hear about, but yet people are very much interested, and they hear about those things, they look into it, they read books. So I really feel like it is happening. There is this like movement, really this shift going on.
Yeah. So what are we talking about? Like that should be the question, because I mean, I think, you know, if I take all the context that I have between the three of us out of the equation, I'd probably be like, okay, I'm hearing them talking about meditation and different ways to tap into consciousness and so forth, like the practices, I guess you will, and if you will, and the people that are listening to this show are very much, you know, I would say, I'm making assumptions here, but are tapped into, they've got routines and practices that have helped guide them to where they're at and so forth. But like, what are we really talking about in terms of accessing when it comes to consciousness? Like, what are some use cases, or what have you two seen out there that is interesting?
Yeah, I can start. I mean, if I had to like put it into three words, what really lights me up these days is materialism is dead. And that's how you know, I'd think about it in the context of at least all conversations so far, and maybe this episode, is really, it's time to go beyond this story for us all as a global race of beings, because it's limiting us. It's been really helpful for us up to this point. You know, we've acquired great comfort, a longer life expectancy, better health. But now it's reaching its limits in terms of the benefits it can give us. And it's actually really hindering our growth. And there is now, again, like precedent or proof and science supporting the fact that materialism is not the right scientific way to approach reality. And there's just so much more than matter as we understand it.
So you just mean like living on this physical world or living in this physical world?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can just share a quick example of it.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the one that comes up because it's quite recent is this latest study from the HeartMath Institute and Joe Dispenza, where they looked at group healing. So during Joe Dispenza's retreats, there's those big events where he brings in 1,500 people together to send intention to heal someone all together at the same time. And they measured the impacts of this group intention on a little device called the random number generator. So this little device that generates number every millisecond, zeros and ones. And they analyzed how much do you deviate from kind of the statistical norm, the average, and, you know, to what extent. And so they saw during this event that when people focus together as a group and have a concrete intention, the random numbers are not random anymore. They're starting to be coherent and in a statistical way, in a very highly statistical way. And it's not the first study of its kind. There's been a number of them like this that start telling us, hey, I can actually affects, you know, if I can affect a device, I'm affecting matter with my mind. I'm affecting matter as a group with our thoughts, with our collective thoughts, our intention. So what else is possible, right? Like you could affect so much. I mean, we've heard about the stories of sudden remission of stage 4 cancers and things like that based on the shift of mindset. So there's a potential we're not tapping into on a day-to-day basis that can affect our lives, you know, in incredible ways.
Thank mm-hmm. you.
Like, I think all of that's again, super interesting. Like when you get into the meditative state or you're meditating with other people. And I participated in a Joe Dispenza healing before remotely, and it was an incredible experience. But that's like kind of jumping into a major acceptance of what this is. And I think it starts a little bit more incrementally than that. And when you're meditating or you're journaling or you're giving any kind of introspection, that's where everything starts to happen, is the self-awareness, I think. So like absolutely rudimentary, that was what I felt, was the self-awareness started to bring me into that state that you're speaking about, which is, okay, I'm not just my material self. When I started looking at my material self, then you could see all of the, how you're connected to everything in some strange way. And so those incremental moments, and the more I became aware of myself, the less material mattered. And as I go on and I go on this journey and I have those kinds of experiences, whether it's, you know, cohesive meditations or meditations on my own or meditations with you guys and having an experience that is like, I don't quite know what that was, but it was something. There's these daily changes that are happening where even how I speak to someone and I can observe it in my mind and have that experience that's taking me into a new space in my life yeah. where the material isn't as tangible as it used to be. If that makes mm-hmm. sense. And so what does that mean? And what's interesting for the journey as it continues and to some people I'm talking about, especially like you guys, is it becomes less and less important. And even with my own life transitions, like my job, my identity, my home, all these things that I have a lot of importance on and the things that generally bring worry to me, they've started to dissipate. And that could be from meditation. That could be from learning to calm my nervous system. But I truly believe it has to do with this materialism perspective, which is, okay, like none of it's really real, but it is real to me in a capacity, but I can control the outcome of my emotions or my reactions to my environment, which is a really great starting point to understanding and then kind of connecting the dots along the way. I don't know if that
yeah.
kind of ties into what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really resonate with that one because mm-hmm. I feel like for me, I've just felt lighter whenever I'm connected to this other realm or a feeling of like higher guidance in some capacity, whether that is through a meditation or even just a simple question like journaling first thing in the morning mm-hmm. and asking like, what would my higher self do in this situation or what's the counsel that I can get? And you do that with a clear mind after sleeping before you inject the real world or the physical world into your mind and so forth. It's amazing kind of what comes up. And it's always just this like reminder of, gosh, like we do, like there's a lot there, but then life starts to happen and like all that kind of gets foggy because we just, you know, our minds just get infiltrated with so much. It's like always coming back, you know, to like, this core, yeah, this core like being in like the current moment and seeing like what's there. But then at the same time, it's like you're caught between worlds in a way, right? Because like we also have bills and families and it's like, oh, that all sounds great. Like just sit there and meditate and listen for the signs and get the guidance, but that doesn't pay the hydro or it doesn't, I shouldn't say that because that's old paradigm living, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely is. Even what you said there when you're getting caught up in life and you're like, I want to go and explore this, but I have to come back and I have to earn a living.
Yeah.
But those kind of questions get really interesting as you start to explore them, which it comes back to that worry, right? Okay, I have control over the worry now. And if I can remove that and take that energy back for myself, the application to go out and find a way to solve that problem for earning becomes a lot easier, right? And so it does solve for that in some kind of interesting way. But then on the other side of things, you can also start to say, okay, well, what am I even doing? Like, why do I need to work to pay the hydro bill? And then you can start to spiral and then philosophical rabbit holes start to come into play. And I ask this question all the time. I would say I'm in a similar boat, but yeah, how do you balance, you know, one foot in, one foot out? And why are we even doing that? Like, that's also a really big question, right? We're not here to answer all that, but these are the things
I'll give us the answers.
Yeah, I know. I love this so much. There's so many things that came up and I'm trying to figure out where to start, but I guess I'll start with this one is this insight I got. I think I might have told you guys before when I was driving back from this meditation retreats where, you know, and like the one liner of this is like an exploration of kind of the dreamlike visions and dreamlike kind of lands and for, you know, 5 hours a day meditating really deep and getting your brains entrained with audio technology to access different states of consciousness. Anyways.
Yeah. No, hold on. Just go a little bit deeper because I just having experienced it because there are versions of that are, you know, 40, 45 minutes as well that take, like, just explain a little bit that, the sound and like kind of what's happening and what's possible because I think that is, I mean, it's accessible. You don't have, I mean.
It's definitely accessible.
Anyone can go on the retreat, of course, that would be great. But I mean, there are other ways to access this as well.
You can definitely do it for a lot cheaper. Yeah. So the main piece of technology that we use at the Monroe Institute is called neural entrainments. And what that is audio technology that essentially creates a pulse in your ears. It's similar to binaural beats. It's a little bit more advanced than that. And binaural beats, what it is, just quick little, you know, parenthesis on that is, it's a difference of frequency between your left and your right ear. So say you have 100 hertz going into your left ear, 104 hertz going into your right ear. There's actually an auditory illusion. Your brain creates an illusion that there's a 4 hertz pulse, like a difference of those two sounds or something like that. It's actually not a sound being produced in any of the stereo output. It's just an illusion that your brain creates. And we've seen that this illusion actually helps entrain the pace of your neurons firing. So we know that through EEG, through electroencephalography, neurons fire at a certain speed or speeds. It's actually multiple at the same time. You get alpha, beta, gamma, theta, delta, and they all correspond to different states of consciousness. And so you can actually entrain the brain with binaural beats and other audio tech to either slow down, quote unquote, get more into this like relaxed, even sleepy state, drowsy state, or focus, or get into a state of flow. There's tons of things you can even just, you know, type binaural beats on YouTube for focus, for sleep, and there's ways to actually entrain the brain into different states of consciousness. So that's kind of the technology, and then added on top of that, there's a layer that sounds a little bit like hypnosis, layer of guidance, visual guidance, or our body-based guidance that helps enter those states a bit more effectively. So that's accessible, you know, online. There's things online for the Monroe website, there's things in person and all of that stuff. And there's other ways to create altered states of consciousness through audio and through visual entrainment. But yeah, that's kind of the high level. And that's, you know, been going on for, like I said, 50 years and very much a proven method with pretty extraordinary results and accounts from people, both, you know, on the research, like quantitative side of things and also anecdotally as well. So that's...
Yeah, sorry. Thanks for providing that. Back to regular programming.
No, You're right. That's what a really good podcaster does. So yeah, coming out of this retreat, they actually tell you, do not drive during the retreat. So you're on this retreat center in the middle of nowhere and don't drive.
Oh, naturally. Val's in the car.
Then I'm driving. I like to break rules every now and then. No, but it's interesting because, again, it's like non-invasive methods. We're not talking about plant medicine. It's like, you know, accessing those states, but without anything, like taking any substance. But at the end of the retreat, I had to go to the airport, actually. So, I just took the car. And as I was driving, first of all, I was like, oh, I've got to be going so fast right now. Like, I can feel like the landscape is passing me by really quickly. And then I turn and I see a truck passing me and I look at my speed. I'm like 5 miles an hour under the speed limit. I'm like, how is this even possible? So that was funny and also kind of dangerous. And then, but the biggest insight I think that I had, which ties into what you were saying, Aaron, is really like I was looking around on the road. You know, I was on those highways and I saw those like billboards and those, you know, red lights and cars and trucks and, you know, and stores and everything felt a little bit surreal. Like it had a sense of like, no, but wait, this is not real. Like this, it's not real, quote unquote. And it felt actually like a dream. Like it felt like we've sort of, you know, built this collective dream all together. And I had heard that before. There's wisdom traditions, Buddhism and others that talk about how our awake life is a dream and our dreams is our real life. And I've never really understood it until now. Coming back from this place, I was looking at it with a lot more distance. And that ties into what you were saying, Aaron, like, you know, it felt a little bit absurd in a way, like, whoa, there's like, you know, you can get financing to buy a house and a mortgage. It was just strange concepts. How did we get here kind of thing? You know, and even just looking at a building, like, wait, what, people like living on top of each other and those cube things? It just felt, I felt like an alien for a second landing on Earth for the first time.
Which, by the way, it was the day before we were supposed to give our talk, and I'm getting voice notes from this guy living in the dream world. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, and but it's
good
interesting
topic, at least.
I noticed.
Thanks for showing up. Thank you for coming.
I could have just dropped everything and left for somewhere on an island. I don't know. But it was interesting to see the distance, right? And feeling a little less pulled into anxiety. And actually coming back to the talk we were giving, I felt zero anxiety. And I usually feel a little bit when I give a talk or when I have anything like that. I felt zero. I felt very comfortable. It created a distance with the worries. I could still operate in this world, in this day-to-day, with a little bit more. I can't say I was enlightened and everything was perfect. Like, you know, I have two young children and they pulled me right back into the, you know, the depth of this human life. But yeah, there's a bit more distance. And I think that's maybe what we're getting to here. You know, I mean, you can end up enlightened and living on the side of the road for your whole life and maybe be perfectly happy, but that might not be fulfilling for a lot of people. Yeah. So yeah, I just feel like there's a lot to say about this nice place to be in where there's a bit of that understanding I can operate in this world and I can have that distance, I can witness that there's a lot more to it, you know, than what we can touch and see.
I feel like there's just, I mean, and this could of course change and depends on where you're at on your own journey, but just speaking for myself, like, it's almost like micro moments of these states of consciousness. And, you know, like you mentioned, you can get into them using various modalities and tools and so forth. But it's just prioritizing time to like build that into the way that you operate day in and day out. And, you know, I think doing that more and more, and it starts to compound and stack. And then all of a sudden, you can access those states a little bit easier, or you start seeing details that maybe others aren't seen or you would have missed and so forth. And like, I think that's where, at least in the physical world, where a lot of this stuff shows up, right? It's like, okay, that's, you know, we're using it for a book that we're writing, and I'm using it for just even like, okay, where's the business going? Or like, what am I missing? And just like kind of tapping into what you were saying before, Aaron, or I'm paraphrasing, or at least putting my words, it's like, you don't feel so alone. It's guidance, right? It's like, okay, like you can ask the questions, and if you can get clear and quiet enough, it's actually possible to get good guidance back, which is not something that's new. any culture, if you go back far enough, I mean, this is all built in everything, frankly, right?
Well, like everything that we're referencing now are like, it's historical information. Like everything that we're reading from the Monroe Institute, like they were doing that in the 70s, and we're like, whoa, remote viewing. And it's like, yes, that's been around. And so we're all kind of encountering that. And I think it is probably the self-centered perspective is that now that we're experiencing it and we're connecting, it feels so new to us and it's happening to people around us. But it could very well be that it has always been that way and that we just were not there yet, right? So however it is panning out, I'm excited to be experiencing it now and meeting other people that are going, wait a minute, like, did you just message me at 3:33? Like, that's my number, whatever it is, right? All of these things that happen, or like yesterday, I think I had 3 messages in a phone call within seconds of me thinking about these people. And like that kind of stuff isn't surprising anymore. It's just that awareness that's coming to be. Are we in some kind of elusive state? I don't know all of that. I know that there are 2 or more and we can access it. And I know that me having accessed it has made my current reality much better. Whether it means like relationship, like the way that I behave with other people, like I had mentioned, like reactive behavior, even like road rage. I don't think anyone rages harder than me on the road.
Really?
Oh my gosh. I'm a whole other person with road rage, right? If somebody goes back, like you're just screaming the most, I think it's Bill Burr or something that like talked about this, like screaming at people saying the most vile things. But now I'm just like, oh, I'm in the way, like after you, please go ahead. Like I have all the time in the world. And so that helps me function here. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's okay to not have the answers as to like what's going on over there or like to be able to completely explain it. I just know whatever I'm doing is helping me function here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. There's something that you said around like how it's also just simply fun to be in this space, like to notice those little things. It's actually, why would I deprive myself of just having a little bit of fun like this? You know, whether... Again, we're delusional or not, like maybe who cares, you know, if I can function in this world and you know, be comfortable and live a good life as well as having fun with it. And I realized, you know, when I definitely come from a very, very skeptic background, like heavy Cartesian thinking, like very much science driven. And I guess I had fun with that too, to some extent, like, you know, wanting to, you know, logically get to the conclusion and, you know, debate someone and like even to the point of arguing and to the point of, you know, not damaging relationships at some point. So I think we're putting as a society a lot of emphasis on this logical thinking when this like belief aspects of life, can I believe more in things without necessarily knowing, that actually demands more of us. It's harder, right, to believe in something if I don't have all the answers about it. And when we do, I think it's extremely rewarding, at least I'll speak for myself. And it is kind of fun. Like you start noticing things and it's just, I wouldn't go back.
Yeah. Well, I think like if you approach a topic with just genuine curiosity and like you said, it's almost like a sense of adventure. Like, okay, what am I going to figure out next year? Or what's going to come up next? And what other questions, you know, do I have and so forth. But like, as you're saying, like just believing in something that you don't have all the answers to, like, I mean, as you're saying that, I'm like, we have, and many still do a lot of that. Like, I just think religion across the board, like there's so much there that it's just kind of unwavering belief. And for a large segment of the population, there's no problems at all with that. Right. So it's like, it's funny though, when you get into these kind of topics, it's like it can easily fall into this woo-woo space. But now, you know, given there actually is like some pretty compelling evidence. And then when you really start to experience it yourself, you're like, actually, I don't really care like whether there's science supporting this or not, but because you're there. Right.
And you know, what's interesting too is that science itself is based on beliefs.
Yeah.
Theories. Right. Yeah. Actually, coincidentally, I didn't prepare this, but I have this book right here.
Galileo.
What a genius.
Galileo Commission Report. Just
beyond that poor guy.
Worldview. Yeah. Didn't turn out so well for him.
No.
But half of this magazine, it's pretty thick, is like the first half is all about how the assumptions of science today are based on like, that's what they are, it's assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not proven. There's a lot of them. There's just zero proof around them. Just enough scientists have used those to help understand the world to like a great extent and also create technologies that help us. So we've sort of assumed that now it's, you know, part of reality. It's true. It works, but similar to, and we've talked about this, the three of us before, how Wi-Fi would have been magic like 100 years ago, or not even that, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And all those technologies are just becoming just like a given and prove that science is right and this is how the world works, when it's all, again, it's belief-based.
Yeah, yeah. So what questions do you think we should be asking? Either, I mean, probably both, like as an individual, but then also if you're on a team or running a team or have an organization that's yours, like, yeah, I guess what are some questions that come to mind for the two of you that can help people start to go down this path?
I would start at the beginning with hiring, right? And if you're building a company or you are in a leadership position in a company, you first have to identify who you are and what this is about, right? What is it that you're mm-hmm. building and working toward? And then it's finding alignment, right? It doesn't mean that everybody has to be sitting down and meditating. And we've talked about this before, of how you can kind of build those types of, relationships with people or bring them and expose them to those practices. But it is alignment, which is, this is how we believe. This is how we drive toward our goals with the company. This is what we do in order to make this work and ensure that we're staying on point. We aren't calling it an OKR or a KPI, but having that identified at the beginning as a leader, and then when you hire, bringing those conversations in and kind of testing that out in an individual, whether they're adaptive in that capacity, they don't have to be exposed to it right away, but the openness to it, because that makes things a lot easier. Because you're not spending all of your time, evangelizing and convincing people thereafter. I've seen that in leadership. If you have people that are skeptical in your team, it's very hard to convert. And there's a lot of energy and time put into that. And it probably costs a lot of money to organizations at the end of the day. So I would say that's like a good starting point, is like get clear within yourself and identify that. And then you start to bring on the right people. Doing that early on is like, it saves everything, time, money, mm-hmm. headaches, all of it.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, go in a slightly different direction, more like on the individual side. And I think one of the most powerful questions is the one you ask at every beginning of your episodes, Mark. Who am I?
Yeah.
Because there's just a lot more to us than our profession, our roles as sons, brothers, daughters, parents. There's just so much more. And so kind of that quest of understanding who we are, at least for me, is what's led me on this journey, trying to kind of figure out what am I here to do? What's my purpose? Like, who am I deep down? And the more I ask myself that question, the bigger I become. It's like, yeah. Who am I? The answer gets bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where, okay, now I am the whole universe. And it feels like this interconnectedness brings me joy and fulfillment. And also back to what we were saying before, a little bit of, less prone to anxiety or to emotional responses, reactions, and having a better time on this planet. For me, that's one question that I think is quite powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I support that question. It's a good question. But I guess expanding what you're saying, Aaron, I think like in the professional setting as well, and this works personally as also, but I think just modeling the behavior or using yourself as a use case, like, hey, tried something a little bit new and this is what came up. Like, what does everyone think? And I think of some of the people that have shared on the show, gosh, I mean, years back at this point, I've shared this with you, but for there's a lot of new listeners here, so you might not have caught this episode, but it was a conversation with CEO Naveen Jain, and I'll never forget when he shared the example of, he's running this giant company and has all these decisions to make, and the team brings all this data and spreadsheets and PowerPoints and all that kind of stuff to make this big decision, and he takes it all in, and then he asks everyone to just leave and took 15 or 20 minutes, closed his eyes, and mentally put himself 6 months in the future, having made the decision, and just sat in that for 15 or 20 minutes to see, like, does anything feel intuitively off? And and sometimes the answer was like, yes, there's something that feels off, and that, like, it's no deal, even though on paper everything looked really good. And then I think he shared afterwards, like, in a lot of those cases, 7 months go by and it's like, oh wow, good thing we didn't do that, and they saved millions of dollars. As it's just one example, right? So like, you share things like that, I mean, there's nothing special about doing that. Like, any of us can do that, whether could be any use case.
It's not as easy as you think too. It sounds easy. Like, of course, I've arrived at this. Some people are threatened by it. They're threatened by what they don't understand, or if they haven't experienced it or even heard about it before, right? So if you're working with like a pre-existing team and you are kind of arriving at this, like I had this with one of my co-founders, where me and the other co-founder were very spiritual, and we talked about our dreams on like our Monday morning call. I'm like, oh, I dreamt about this and I met with this political figure and I think that's really important for our business. Maybe we need to go that direction. There was these kind of conversations happening. And this one guy is on the phone going like, or on the call, guys, I don't believe in any of this stuff, but what do you want to do? Like, what's the next step?
So
he was allowing us to be us, but he wasn't embracing it at all. And sometimes he felt left out. Sometimes he was annoyed with it. And you could see that. And we were, of course, getting overexcited and maybe not being understanding of the position he was coming from. So there's a lot of ways to navigate it, but people are not as receptive, even if you deliver it in a really subtle way. So I think there is a fine line of kind of dumping it on them, like, hey, I had this dream, versus like you're saying, I tried this experiment, I sat with it, and I'm using more like from an intuition perspective in decision making. But it's tough. It's not for everyone right away, right?
So what did you like in that situation? What worked well, or what would you have done differently?
What worked well, and like how we brought him around, because like the conversations were, sometimes they were intense, and like we were working on some projects together that were like late nights and things like that. And we were like, just try it. So that kind of work is like, sure.
So
we're just like, listen, it's not, if it doesn't harm you, right, let's just try it, right? And so he would come into it with like a little bit more of an open mind, and that's how we were doing it. But we did dial it back a little bit, and we had respect for his position, but he was quiet in it. I do think it causes problems if people aren't specifically there, or if they have their own pre-assumptions of what that experience is. That experience is God or Allah or an insert name here, right? It's a very different experience to other people. People find that to be sacred. So
what,
if you're
was
bringing
it, though, Aaron, like what was
it,
like,
is
for
like
him,
meditation,
then, like,
dreams, okay, intuition, journaling. You know, there, I'm very much into Kabbalah. I really like to follow this guy named David Guillaume. I think you guys have been exposed to him as well. I like that for helping my life along. And so we were both talking about those kind of messages and bringing it in. And it was, again, just being in control of our own destiny by accessing consciousness. Right.
Yeah.
And how to formulate that. And so we brought that into how we were trying to structure and run the company. And then we obviously had other members of the team that were kind of just sitting on the calls going like this sometimes, and they would say nothing ever. But that was a little bit like, hey, we're going to go do this. If you guys want to join in, you can. So again, I'm not saying don't do it, but there are going to be naysayers. It could be disruptive in the workplace if people are skeptical as well.
It's a great point. And it's like, I find that it's something that is part of very, like a lot of people that I know, and I think it's part of the common path of growth, is this moment of thinking, oh, I know now. I have the answers. And a lot of people don't. And so let me show everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a little bit that spiritual ego that comes into play, mm-hmm, of, you know, I'm better. I know what's going on. And it's like, of course, you know, no one knows what the heck is going on. And part of the growth is kind of, you know, going beyond that and having respect. And I think what you did sounds really good, because you not only like allowed yourself and your co-founder to get into the practice and like actually explore those areas. You didn't shut it down and you know, broke your own boundaries for it. You actually like went ahead, but with respect. And of course, it's like up to everybody else to join. But I think it's important, because there's a tendency, and I've heard it before, many people to think about the future of humanity having like, there's going to be two groups. There's going to be essentially the enlightened ones and the ones who get left behind. And like, you know, you either like grow spiritually or you, whatever, you like eat our crumbs on the street.
I know what group I'm in.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're part of the good group.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's something that's very common, I think, especially in the spiritual, you know, in like all those events, like breathwork meditation. It's kind of a, hey, I see you, you see me, we're part of the good guys, you know, and everybody else is part of like the bad guys. They don't know what's going on. And I think it's a terrible way to think about it, because it's actually doing the exact same thing we've always done, which is separation. Like, I am different from you. Like, I am better than you. And so to me, there's only one way up. It's like we all go, or no one does. I love what you just said.
Yeah. But I think like, it's not just, I mean, we're talking about consciousness right now. But I mean, I see this even when speaking about mental fitness. I would say the question I probably get most often after a presentation, you know, kind of walking away, there are people like, hey, I do a lot of the things that you were talking about, but like my partner is really stressed, really struggling, like, and I just want to be able to, you know, do this, do that. And it's kind of like anything. I mean, if you try to force this stuff on someone, they're not ready, right? Or that's not the language to use versus just, I think, just like parenting. I mean, your kids pick up your energy and they see what you're doing. And even though when you think they're not watching and listening, they are. And all of a sudden, you know, 3 months down the road, they say something and like, oh gosh, sure. Like you've been paying attention to that, you know? So I think we could use this for these kind of practices as well. And just about your point, like just individually, like that's what we can control and be like, hey, and just share, right? Like I think of you and I Val have done this for our book project, and I feel like any team can do something similar. Like we did a 40 minute or 45 minute Monroe guided session through their gateway program, but there's versions of this in their app as well. And we just set the intention of like, where's this book going, or where does it need to go? Because I think you and I were stuck or we didn't have a clear answer. And then you both go, like we both went down a journey and then just came back and shared what came up. Like imagine doing that with a team. Like you don't force the question on the other person. Like here's what we're going to do. Send your question out there, be open and just drop into this experience. And then we're just going to report back as a group. Like I'm almost willing to bet 100%, like everyone's going to experience something, or the vast majority will. And it's just going to make for a really interesting conversation to at least start things off.
I think that's a really good point. And again, it always comes back to like, how can you do it in a rudimentary way that makes it tangible or understanding? And like we've talked about this before, where athletes, right, they do breath work or they do visualization. And so like if you, again, you're the king of this, Mark, of being able to like make things palatable for people. So it's a great way to do that. And just if you're sitting in, if you've never meditated before and you're in a group, okay, we're just going to visualize like what we want the outcome to be. And then that also brings people into a different space, right? A different space than being in the worry of what the possible bad decision would bring you to. And so I think that's a great perspective of what you're saying there as well.
Yeah. And it's often like I find that the way to kind of set traps for people is through either health or performance. It's like, we'll do this practice, we'll do this thing. It's going to, you know, it's good for our health. We know now meditation, all this, it's like so good for health. It's so good for performance. Your brain is going to feel clearer, sharper. You know, do a cold plunge and you'll feel, you know, so good. And through those experiences, eventually, whether it's the first one or the 10th one, there's going to be something a little bit different about it, a peak experience, a moment, an altered state that might occur, you know, during a breathwork hold or whatever, like a thought, an idea that comes to mind. And that's kind of how, to me, I've seen that a lot in this industry, is start at health and performance. You explore new modalities like meditation, breathwork, even yoga. From there, you either hear from others or you experience yourself peak experiences or mystical experiences, altered states of consciousness. And from there, you start the curiosity path. It's like, wait a second, what's out there? What is going on? And then you kind of get onto this whole train. So I find that it's hey, we'll be more performant as a team, we'll, you know, feel better after this, and then guiding some kind of meditation or practice to come up with answers and be creative with it. It's a good way to do it.
So I'll start wrapping up a little bit or getting close to a wrap up, but one topic I really want to bring up with the two of you, because we've been kind of really spending a lot of time on like how to get started and so forth, right? And starting to get some guidance and some awareness and so forth. And Val, you of course mentioned, you provided one example with the HeartMath Institute and the healing work and so forth. But like, let's give some real what's possible here and what's been documented, whether that's through some of the Monroe stuff or things. I mean, there are many examples, frankly, but what comes to mind just to show like, let's dangle the carrot a little bit, if you will.
Okay, well, let's see. There's so much. I think maybe one of the most spectacular things that I can think of is the remote viewing practice. So remote viewing is, for everyone who's not familiar with it, is the ability to see a target, quote unquote targets, at a distance without my physical eyes. And so in the 70s, there was a rumor that Russia or USSR was spending, I think there was like someone in the USSR government that was a spy for the US that told them how much money, and it was in terms of millions, I don't remember, they were investing in this area of research. Can we actually see at a distance? And the US got really scared, like, whoa, are we missing something here? So they started what's called Project Stargate. And Project Stargate was where they hired people who seem to have natural talents to try and do espionage at a distance. They have, so I actually met with Stargate subject 001, Joe McMonagall, who's a trainer at the Monroe Institute, and we've had a couple of conversations, and he has an incredible track record, probably the best track record out there, of being able to detect. He's located, there was this facility in Siberia that he located. It was like, it's massive, we don't know what's going on. I think the satellites were locating it and they could see it was big, but they weren't sure what was built in it. And so he was able to see that they were actually building like a submarine three times the size as any of the American submarines from that facility. That was later proven through, you know, satellite imaging and the research that they did. And so he's done that over and over again. He's found missing people from literally just sitting down, concentrating. And there's a whole protocol, you know, with Monroe Institute and others out there on how to learn how to do remote viewing. It's accessible to anyone. To sit down, going through what they call cool down, it's a cool down period of kind of getting focused in a relaxed state. And then just literally on a piece of paper, drawing what's coming into the mind. And he does that on television. There's been many, many TV shows where he appears and he, you know, correctly guesses quote unquote what somebody else is seeing or target in an envelope. And he trains every day. Like he does it. It's like he's 80 year old man, and he keeps training. But that's some of the most incredible things out there that have been proven over and over again with, like, it couldn't have been chance by a lot. So if you look at the data, it's something like 1 in 10 to the power of 23. So 23 zeros after the one. Wow. That it would have been just random, you know, chance and coincidence. So
yeah, yeah.
The guy's had 3 near-death experiences. Like he's traveled out of body like so many times. There's so much that makes him special too, but he teaches it and it's accessible to people. That's one example, but there's so much. As you know, I was just reading now actually in this report, maybe just another quick one with a random population. So no one talented. What they call dream telepathy. And it's essentially a setup where you have one subject who's sleeping, another one who's sending images that appear on a random computer. Like as a bird, as a house, and they try to focus their intention on sending that image to the person who's dreaming and then seeing correlations. So there's a judge who doesn't know what is what, which one is the dream, which one is the, you know, the intention, and they compare and they match to a certain score. And this also, I forget the number, I think it's the probability that it would have been chance is 10 to the power of 8. So essentially 1 in 100 million chances. Yeah. So it's all things like this that have been proven over and over again, meta-analysis of multiple papers coming together that show that telepathy is real. Precognition, which is the ability to see into the future, anticipate an event, is real. You know, lucid dreaming is real. You can actually, you know, of course, take ownership of your dream. Remote viewing, I'm forgetting. Even telekinesis or psychokinesis. So there's even if we want to go, I guess, the most extreme, there's a spoon bending 101 course at the Monroe Institute. And I've seen.
I think we're talking about we're launching a program, spoon unbending, so you can use it again, 101.
That's right.
Exactly.
Because a bent spoon is pretty useless.
Yeah, yeah. But on that too, like, and we've all been down this rabbit hole. I mean, I think another one is, I highly encourage everyone to pick up Dan Brown's latest book, Secrets of Secrets.
Yeah. That's their book.
I mean, and we just also randomly were all reading this book. Val and I, there were some links to the book we're working on and so forth. But anyway, just everything in there, if anyone's familiar with Dan Brown's work, is factual when it comes to the locations and what he's speaking about when it comes to, in this case, it's consciousness, and there's a ton happening here. And you're often reading the book thinking, like, is that actually happening? And like all the stuff is referenced. So if you really want to exercise your mind and see what's possible, that's another good book
And it's just very entertaining. It's just a very fun book to read. It's not like science papers or whatever. It's just a good thriller with a good foundation on consciousness.
I think so. If I could just add one thing, it's not happening other places now where they're actually pulling this into their societies too, right? So we're still having this conversation and other societies are light years ahead in implementation, right? And we're talking about telepathy and you know, Dan Brown's book, but like the telepathy tapes, for example, is starting to go in this direction where it's showing, you know, encouraging children to be able to tap into this, right? And children are a lot more susceptible because they aren't indoctrinated with societal views and the logical and analytical mind. And China's fully invested in it. And so they have over 10,000 locations, like schools now, where they teach, you know, sight without eyes, where children can, you know, read through other people's eyes. They have like intense memory from a book that they've read through their mind's eye, things like that. So China's investing in it. And then the UK now, the UK has, I think, over 25 schools now where they have children that go to these schools and they learn. And as they're learning through that, all of these other gifts, if you want to call them that, are coming through, like you mentioned, Val, you know, clairvoyance and remote viewing. And these are just kind of, you know, coming out of your five senses, which really that's what this is. We're coming out of our five senses and we're grabbing onto something else or we're experiencing something else. And so the more that we learn to do that, the more we can touch base and tap into other things. But I think it's fascinating that other cultures now are being like, this is important. And again, the host, Kai Dickens, I think it is, of Telepathy Tapes, she said, well, this is now a liability for us in North America if we're not pursuing it. So I would love to officially stamp this as a non-woo-woo conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it. Last question for you both. Just what excites you about the future and this topic?
I feel like that's what we've been talking about this whole episode. So much. It's so exciting. So exciting. Yeah. I mean, I cannot wait to see when this becomes the norm, when this becomes mainstream. How does that trickle into every aspect of our lives? Professional, personal. Yeah. I'm so curious to see what that society will look like.
Well, for me and maybe for you guys and anyone else that's a parent, the big thing for me is that like we're kind of paving a road for our children right now where they get to kind of jump over the life that we've had and the experiences we've had and the conditioning that we've had. And that really excites me too. If there's a place where this can be taught or understood on a deeper level so that we can kind of just skip the whole, you know, disconnected part of life, if that makes sense. And so for me to be able to see my kids grow up and for me to, the more I learn, I can create the right environment or at least attempt to create that environment where they have that opportunity that really none of us had. Like you come from a science background, so do I. All right, Val. And like, and Mark, your background as well. Like it's definitely exciting to pave the way for others. And then not in an evangelical way, but in a very subtle way, be the change that you want to see, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, applying that to my own life and then encouraging other people that, hey, maybe this is something that is good for me. And if I can continue to evolve that way and put that out there.
I love it. Probably no surprise to those listening, but I'm excited for the questions I get to ask in this space, like just the adventure of the unknown, which honestly for a long time, and I mean, sometimes I still struggle with this, but I would say now more than ever, I'm kind of more excited about the unknown than fearful of it. And this is a topic or category that just feels like such an adventure that like is so untapped, at least from my side, that I'm like, gosh, like what's going to happen next? And I mean, hence even this conversation and how you all three of us started speaking about it. Mm-hmm. Like, what can we try? What are we not seeing? What, I mean, I didn't know about these other cultures doing this work or investing in schools. I'm like, wow, I want to learn more about that and so forth. So I think, just the sense of adventure and curiosity is mm-hmm. really lighting me up. So thanks to you both. I mean, we'll see where it goes, but my hope is we could fire up a whole podcast in itself on this topic and interview and explore, you know, so many different facets of what this is all about and what people are doing around the world. That would be so cool. So let's put it out into the universe.